The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, March 6, 2022. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching live on YouTube, if you're watching live on YouTube, please smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. That helps us a lot. If you haven't subscribed yet to the YouTube channel, stop making me beg you. Just do it already so we can move on from this portion of the podcast. Dead Leg is back from Durham, North Carolina, where he sat courtside Saturday night for Mike Krzyzewski's final game inside Cameron Indoor Stadium. Did not go well for Coach K. Final score, North Carolina 94, Duke 81. The Tar Heels scored 55 points in the second half. Spoiled Coach K's going away party, added a massive quadrant one win, and probably secured an at-large bid to the 2022 NCAA tournament. Dead Leg, we joked on Friday's podcast that it would be hilarious if UNC beat K in his final game at Cameron. I didn't think it would actually happen. How did that happen?
I got to do it. If you, for whatever reason, and there's no reason, none, but if for whatever reason you did not catch Friday's show, here's about a minute and a half or so. Here's what happened Friday before we knew what was going to happen.
I was wrong. Dead Leg, do you realize nobody can hear this other than you, I think?
Oh, really? Okay. No one can hear it?
Can't you just keep it basic?
Why can't you hear it?
I don't know. I didn't even know that was going to be a part of the show.
So wait a second. You mean to tell me?
I was just sitting here.
You heard that, though.
Heard that. That was great. Gee, just keep it simple, man. Just keep it simple.
Okay, never mind. Oh, it sounded so great, too. All right.
I was hoping that maybe everybody else could hear it, and I was the only one, so I was just going to sit there like I'm listening to something, and then you would start talking again when it was done. Nobody can hear it. What a disaster. Let's start over.
Start over.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday. Just kidding. What a mess. Jesus Christ. You know this is the type of stuff that irritates me to death.
So UNC beat Duke on Saturday night. Yeah. We said it would be hilarious if it happened. We did think it was remotely possible.
Yeah, no, I established all that before.
And then it actually happened.
Before you went to your fake audio, I established all of that. I established that we said it was hilarious, it would be hilarious if it happened, but that we didn't think it would happen. I established that right at the top. Then you had to play fake audio. Yeah.
I played the harp noise. There was silence. And someone goes, but I heard this too.
I was wrong.
So it was just. Sorry, that's just funny. Got to roll with the punches there. Oh, too good. It was quite an environment there. When did you think it was done? When did you think Carolina beating K and Duke was actually in the bag? 2 minutes to go? Because Keels hit a three with like 3 minutes to go that cut it to five. And I thought, okay, it's still on the table there. And then after that, UNC just didn't wilt whatsoever. And I will say the environment in the building, it started to turn from good anxiety to, oh bleep, this is really going to happen, anxiety, before that happened. Like 4.5 minutes to go, you could feel the tension rising and like, this isn't supposed to happen. Like, there's no way Duke's supposed to actually lose in this moment. So I'm wondering, as someone who watched it on TV, was hearing kind of, I assume, the play-by-play, when did it feel like it was actually slipping away from Duke and they were going to drop this one?
I don't know if you realize this, but nobody can hear what you're saying right now.
Stop.
When Brady Manick kept making threes over and over again, I was like, okay, they're not. When Duke couldn't get a stop, when North Carolina kept scoring, I was like, okay, this is done. I mean, you look up at some point and it's like an 8-point game with not enough time left, and that's it. And you start to go, okay, this is really happening. And then they turned it into a double digit win. It was like you went very quickly from maybe Duke can make a late run to, oh no, North Carolina's going to win this by double digits. It's a wild scene.
It was a wild scene. It was a crazy environment, man. I've been to a Duke Carolina game before, and this one seemed to exceed it by two. There were definitely more. It was beyond capacity in that building. And you sat at those seats on press row. They're always up against you, but like the entire time, man, like they were up on the whole time.
For people who don't realize what it's like to sit on press row at Cameron Indoor, first off, you have to climb into your seat. You have to walk on the court like you're coaching, and then you have to climb over the table to get into your seat. There's no other way to get there. And then you have college kids leaning on your back the entire time. If you wear something nice, it will have blue paint on it when you leave. Sometimes you got boobs on your head the entire time. I sat through a whole Duke Carolina game one time. C cup on my head the whole time. Just sitting there like this, trying to watch a basketball game. I got 22-year-old C cups on my head.
It's a Sunday show, folks. It's a Sunday show. That's all I can say. Carolina, oh, by the way, locks up a tournament bid. Agree?
I think that's almost certainly true, although I will defer to our CBS Sports bracketology expert, Jerry Palm, on Inside College Basketball late Saturday night. He said it's not done. Like, if they were to take a horrific loss in the ACC tournament, they might still be in trouble. But he conceded, and I think it's accurate. They're probably good enough to go. But for whatever it's worth, because North Carolina fans were angry at me because I said, and this likely secures an NCAA tournament. And they were like, likely? It definitely does. D-head? And I'm like, what? One guy told me to shut up. We now got two quadrant one wins. I'm like, UC Irvine's got two quadrant one wins. Calm down. You're North Carolina. It's March 5th. You can't tell people to suck it because you just picked up your second quadrant one win. I think they're in no matter what, probably. Jerry Palm was not willing to go that far.
I'm locking him. I don't see him getting left out after you went on the road at Duke, get that quad one level win. I don't see it happening. I'd be truly shocked if North Carolina's not in the NCAA tournament. I think that one was good enough there. As for the scene, there were some people of some renown, but I was actually a little surprised there weren't more. I don't know. I thought there might be a couple more big names, but Jerry Seinfeld sitting next to Adam Silver. What's the deal? You had Ken Jeong there. Best seat in the house, probably Scott Van Pelt. Had the baseline, there were two rows. He had the aisle seat next to Duke's bench. Basically could have been consulting in the huddle. Shouts to SVP. But other than that, the wall of Duke players, that was really cool. So when they started the game, before they started the game, and oh, by the way, actually, before I get to that point, because I didn't see any of this, but I was following it on social media. Apparently, it was an absolute disaster of a broadcast situation because Texas and Kansas went overtime, and they were going split screen on it with the ceremony.
Listen, it was less than ideal because if you're ESPN, I'm certain you want to have the build up to the game and the walk onto the court and as much of the pregame scene as you can have. Mm-hmm. But like for a viewer, you just had to go to ESPN2. It was fine, you know?
Oh, that's what it was? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they moved it to ESPN2 until Texas Kansas was over. So it was like, if you didn't want to miss anything, you didn't miss anything. But I'm sure the last thing ESPN won, it was for Texas Kansas to go to overtime.
and that's what it did. When the players all came out, they made the human tunnel. Leitner was like maybe 12 feet in front of me. He's rocking like he's got a gray goatee. It was kind of jarring actually to see. It's like, man, because he looked like Leitner, but at the same time, it's like he's starting to age, which is completely understandable there. And yet all these guys that were so excited, like, you know, Grayson Allen, Quinn Cook walking out. Grayson had like a couple days off, which, by the way, I want to know why Zion Williamson didn't come. He's not playing.
I have a theory.
What do you think the theory is on that? Because I didn't think about it in the moment until like after the game. And so I was like, why wasn't Zion here? Grayson Allen's an active NBA player who had an opening, because I was told like Kyrie and Tatum, if they couldn't go and get back to their games, but like Allen had two full days off or whatever, so he was able. But what's your theory on Zion and why he wasn't there?
And let me preface what I'm about to say with, I'm not joking and I'm not trying to be mean. I just have a theory on this. This is a young man who, from the age of 15, 16 on social media, was like a god. He was, dunking and going viral. And every time he got on Instagram, every time he got on Twitter, people were adoring him. That was probably age 16, 17, 18, 19. Then his 1 year at Duke. Now, every time he gets on social media, he must see the opposite of that. He's a joke now. He's a meme now. He's fat shamed now. And I wonder, because when's the last time anybody's seen Zion Williamson in public? He left New Orleans, went to Portland. He's been rehabbing out there. Nobody's seen him publicly in a while. I wonder if he's not heavy still, and he's just embarrassed to be seen right now. And because I know that's a real thing with normal people. Like, I know somebody who was getting ready to go on a cruise, and they canceled the cruise because they put on like 15 pounds during COVID. And they were like, I'm not comfortable going on a cruise and wearing a swimsuit at this weight. I don't want to be seen like this. And with that story in my head, I wondered if he's just not comfortable with the way he looks right now. And doesn't, and he knows that when he walks into Cameron Indoor and people take pictures of him, or the cameras get him and he goes on TV, or he gets on Twitter, it's just look at Fat Zion over and over again. I bet you. I obviously have no way of knowing,
right?
But that is a theory, and I think it's a totally reasonable theory.
The only thing that I thought about was like Zion, because he's not playing, he hasn't been seen. He's still, he's in the top 5-6 headlines NBA news cycle on a weekly basis kind of deal. And while there's truly nothing that could overshadow this on Saturday, his mere presence he's the only former Duke player who, by showing up, becomes a separate headline storyline unto himself by him being there. And that speaks to who he was. You see what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't shock me whatsoever to learn if Zion had a 20-minute conversation with Mike Krzyzewski earlier in the day on Saturday or on Friday and explained the situation. They kept that private. And we don't need to go on and on about Zion, but I do think there were, because I bet he wanted to be there. I do think he was, because remember, Zion Williamson wanted to stay at Duke. He has said this multiple times. I did not want to go, but he had no choice there. So him not being there while not being an active NBA player, it was a bit inconspicuous. That's all.
I'll tell you, I don't know if his mere presence would have overshadowed anything. His mere presence looking fat would have overshadowed everything. That would have been the thing that what would have been trending on Twitter? Coach K and Zion, Fat Zion. I don't know, but if he's still heavy, I bet you he just didn't want to be seen in public. He didn't want to have to deal with Saturday night getting beat up on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else.
Despite that, almost half of K's former players showed up. They said the final number was 96. He had 208 players who have played for him. And I think that includes the active roster there. So remarkable number. And again, to see all those guys up close as they formed the tunnel when K walked out, that was tremendous. That was such a cool moment. Really, really great. And to do that before the game started, then the game actually gets played. And Carolina's ready to go from the get-go, man. Ready to go. And I had talked to UNC assistant Brad Frederick about 4 hours before the game just to get a set. I was like, listen, you guys have been reduced in this game. It's kind of crazy to think about, but it's true. Like, oh, by the way, North Carolina's got to come over here and play us for 40 minutes. Ha ha ha. We'll see how that goes. And what Frederick had told me was, I asked him what his expectations were and how practice, and he's like, practice has been pretty good. We're going to have to play Brady Manek a ton because he's our most reliable big shot getter and, frankly, our most viable passer for a lot of the stuff we run, I guess. It just, Manek really knows, he sees the angles well, and we need him on the floor. But the problem is, and everyone knows this, Brady Manek's just a terrible defender. And so the idea was like, how, you cannot hide him on defense there. So is he going to be good enough on offense that he can offset some of the stuff that he's going to take away from you defensively? Lo and behold, he did. And by the way, Carolina, this is a stunning stat, was in the column I wrote on Saturday night. Carolina had four guys go for 20 or more points. That had never happened before ever in UNC history. 20 or more in the same game from four players. Relatively shocking. So you get it on that night of all nights. Manek's incredible. RJ Davis, who, if and when Carolina gets into the tournament, if it can win a game or two, RJ Davis is going to be the dude. I have seen this guy like five or six times this season in big moments just be completely unafraid. Is he always successful? No, but we talk a ton about Baycott. Manek's a big shot maker. We get it. Leaky Black. Everyone knows the story. He had a beautiful up and under, did Leaky Black. But RJ Davis, even more than Caleb Love, seems to come up really big when they need him to, or at least he's not afraid to try. And so for Carolina to get out early in that game, take a big lead, it was like 9-2, then 11-4. Duke makes a push. It makes a 14-0 run. Paolo Banchero, I don't think the TV cameras caught this, but Banchero was feeling himself early. I mean, he was talking like just competitive little S-talking, if you will, with Manek, because Manek couldn't stop him. And Banchero was getting a lot of what he wanted in the first half. Duke was very active, very confident. Carolina's able to cut it to two at halftime. And I talked to Frederick after the game, and he said at halftime, the vibe in the locker room was, we are good right now. We have withstood this push. We made our own push. It's only a 2-point game. And then second half, they don't sub out. UNC doesn't sub out. It's Manek, Davis, Love, Baycott, and Black the entire second half. They're iron five. They stick with it the whole time. It pays off. Duke goes cold. Krzyzewski said they were horrendous on defense. They didn't communicate whatsoever. In fact, UNC put up more points in 40 minutes, no regular, non-overtime game against Duke than it had in a long, long time. I don't have the stat in front of me. They picked the perfect moment to play the best game of their season. Hubert Davis, who's been under fire from that fan base, well, frankly, I would tell you shut him up, except everyone couldn't stop screaming and yelling, celebrating on Franklin Street where the bus went afterward. And it was kind of funny on like a personal note. So we're about 2 minutes to go. And I'm watching, and at that point, Carolina's pretty much got it. Maybe a minute and a half to go. They're up 8. They're up 10. And I talked to Frederick earlier, and I'm kind of looking at the UNC bench. And then he's directly across from me. And he, if you're watching on YouTube, he looks at me and he starts doing this.
Hey, YouTube.
Yeah, he starts doing this. And I don't know what he's meaning, but this. So I caught up with Matthew. He's like, that was me telling you, your story blew up. You got to write a whole new one because Carolina's about to win this game. And he was right. They're about to win it. They won it. And I thought it was awesome for the rivalry. Yeah, it sucks for Duke. Krzyzewski losing its final home game was something very few people put any credence into, but this is what makes this rivalry great. So good on you, Carolina fans. Duke, we'll see if you can reboot and start anew here in the ACC tournament. I still, you know, they still have a ceiling as high as just about anyone, but those are my kind of like big picture takeaways on the ground there in Cameron. It was an awesome experience to get to cover, and I just couldn't believe it wound up not even being close. Carolina wins by 13, man. Duke's total losses combined 9 points leading into that. And then UNC walks into that building, GP, and wins by 13.
They walked in it like it was Pinnacle Bank. This is a North Carolina team that lost to Tennessee by 17, Kentucky by 29, to Miami by 28, to Wake Forest by 22, by 20 at home to Duke. And then they go and win by double digits at Cameron. They're now 11-2 in their past 13 games. So clearly playing better at this point than they have all season.
Yeah,
just watching the end of this Iowa.
Yeah, Illinois game. How about that? They held on. If you're listening after the fact, where Illinois just beat Iowa 74-72, Illinois is going to be the. That's why we did this later than normal. Illinois is going to be the one seed in the Big Ten tournament. Iowa were almost they had a game winning three attempt there, and now they're going. This is awesome, dude. We can stick on the UNC Duke stuff if you want, but just like on the floor, Illinois gets the one seed after they wanted it last year when there was all that Big Ten scheduling stuff with Michigan, and now the Illini, because we'll get to it soon. Wisconsin couldn't get the job done.
Wendell Moore, back to Carolina Duke, and then we'll move on, said last night that he felt like they kind of got lost in everything, the players. Jay Billis made this point on the broadcast that he didn't think the players were ready for the emotion. Something about the emotion of the day, of the week, had them ill-prepared or not properly equipped to flourish in that scene. And, you know, I'll take the players at their word. If Wendell Moore says, I think we got lost a little bit in everything, I'm going to assume that they did.
Yeah, I think so. But I sat down with Wendell and Joey Baker and Theo John and, like, and, you know, five of Duke's players on Thursday afternoon, and they were very level-headed. I asked them if they felt pressure with this season, with this particular game, and all of them were very casual, convincing, saying, you know, in fact, no, they couldn't wait to be a part of the atmosphere. They weren't sure what they were going to feel once we got to Saturday, but there's the potential for that. Krzyzewski did say it as well, though. Easier to say after the fact, and it's not that he didn't allude to this necessarily on Thursday, but I think between, because Kay's press availability was Thursday at 1 o'clock, the game was, you know, 53 and a half hours later, and he would have experienced a lot, the team would have gone through a lot more between when they spoke to the media and by the time we actually got to where we got there. And Kay opened up a little bit in the post game ceremony and in the post game presser. I want to get to the ceremony before we move on, but in terms of the presser and what he said, our ship was going to sink today no matter what, indicating, and I wanted to ask him, but we ran out of time and I didn't get to ask him this, because I wanted to ask him, all right, if you're saying your ship was going to sink no matter what, you've coached in this game nearly 100 times against Carolina, you've coached for 42 years at Duke, then when did you get that sense that this was not going to be your night? Like, again, Keels hit that tray from the corner. It's a 5-point game. Did you think that it wasn't possible? I'd like to get into his head just a little bit and see when he thought that was, because he was highly complimentary of what UNC did in Hubert Davis's program. But here's one of his quotes. He said, it has been emotional, but before the game you're thinking and you get a little teary eyed and then you say, whoa, I can't do that. And then, so then you go on the court and you feel it. And he went on to talk about all the players. And so that affected him. You could see it on camera. I saw the highlights after, and you could see he was really starting to well up with all of that Parrish. And Krzyzewski said, you know, he was glad that this was over, because the past couple of days, it was almost like they were living in the penthouse. They'd won the ACC regular season title, and that didn't add an element of urgency to this game that he thought they should have had. He took plenty of blame on himself, more than with his players and his teams. But he said, yeah, so basically we're living in a penthouse the last few days, room service, and everyone's saying nice things, and we didn't play hungry today. Last thing for you, I'll ask on this, because I know this aired over on television when they did the ceremony, which was a bit awkward, no doubt about it. It was probably, I don't know, 7-8 minutes between when they walked off the floor after losing and coming back out, the players and Kay, and then his wife, his daughters, and then you had the president, the AD, and then I guess the president of the alumni club, I don't know. That stuff was whatever, like the gifts were whatever. But Kay stepped to the mic and was... because these things are kind of planned out. They got a template, a script, and all that. And he's like, no, this is impromptu. And he's pissed. And he should be pissed. And that's why it's tricky to plan a retirement ceremony and decide you got to put a basketball game in the middle of it, because stuff like this can happen. How did you feel with how that tone started off? Because he said, no. How we played today was unacceptable. The crowd was like so wanting to cheer despite the loss. And I kind of liked how Kay wasn't having any of his, like, he's like, no, this is BS. Like, what we did today, it's absolute crap. You guys deserve better than that. And I actually appreciated him kind of swerving into that moment. I don't know how it played on television or frankly on social media when he did it.
It looked weird. Yeah. You know, like,
it felt a little
yelling at the crowd. I mean, he's yelling at the crowd, you know, no, quiet. Just be quiet.
I know. Because he knows they want to cheer him. And he's like, I don't want that right now. Listen to me. What just happened is that meanwhile, the players are over there on the bench looking like they just got knocked out of the NCAA. I don't know if the cameras caught them or not, but they are dejected in that moment. So it was, anyway, you go ahead and talk, but it was an odd vibe for sure.
Yeah. It just, you know, it was, you know, I wasn't surprised he reacted the way he reacted, but it was still weird. You know, like yelling at the all these people came to honor you and the night ends with you yelling at them. That's what happened. But whatever, you know, whatever. One last thing on this, because it sort of got a lot of attention in the subsequent 24 hours. Chris Carriwell, Duke assistant, did not shake hands with Hubert Davis. And apparently it was because, at least according to the Duke staff, because the North Carolina staff didn't shake hands pregame, or because they didn't honor Kay in Chapel Hill. But, you know, this is another weird scene.
It was. I didn't see it in real time. I actually didn't see. I didn't know that was a thing until, I don't know, an hour after the game. Because then, you know, we had all this stuff going on. So I didn't even know that. And yeah, but it's undeniable. Carwell doesn't. He gives Hewitt the blow by. Again, I don't know if I mentioned this on the pod. I don't care if we do handshake lines or not. I don't care. If you want to have them, awesome. If you don't, I don't care. Coaches are all, a lot of people like sportsmanship got to have. I don't care. If you want to do them good, if you're not, it does not matter to me. I have no opinion on this. Will not change my life one bit if college basketball games have handshake lines once the game's over or not. Don't care. But if they provide the occasional reason for fan bases to flock to the message boards and pour jet fuel on the discussion for an entire offseason, well, then this certainly accomplished that there. I mean, Carwell, you just got to shake his hand. What do you want? I mean, I don't know about that. They didn't shake him pregame. I know that I saw Hubert Davis and Mike Krzyzewski greet each other. I saw that happen. Now, maybe not every assistant shook every assistant. I don't even know. I don't know. But if you're a UNC fan and want to give him more reason to be pissed off at Duke, by all means. And if you're a Duke fan and you want to, you know, use it to dismiss UNC, whatever, then have at it. And if this makes you, if you're a fan of either team and it makes you be more dismissive of Duke, then that's your own prerogative. I don't care. Like he should have shook the Duke's hand. No doubt about it. Like, if you watch the video that went viral, you know, they caught it, Hubert Davis in slow motion. He gives him the look back. He gives him the, because he thinks it's coming and it doesn't. And then it kind of clicks that way. What? And
what?
Like, yeah, exactly. And plus,
like, what's your problem? Like, you guys beat our brains in, you know, a few weeks ago. We shook your hand. And now we beat your brains in, and you won't shake our hands.
I know, like, that was it was uncalled for.
Say whatever you want about Hubert Davis. What everybody can agree on is, like, he's a nice guy. Like, he's just a pleasant man. And yeah, I mean, that to me, that looked like the definition of sore losers. Not the biggest deal in the world, but totally unnecessary. Just shake his hand and move on. As far as handshake lines, I'm with you on this. I take them or leave them. I don't care. I just sort of like rolled my eyes at the debate that followed the Juwan Howard Wisconsin incident a few weeks. You know, I was asked about it then. I was like, listen, if you don't want to have handshake lines, it's fine with me. I don't care. But like, you don't get rid of them because Juwan Howard took a swing at somebody. Like, that's not a reason to get, because one coach one time took a swing at somebody. That's not a reason to get rid of them. That's like, you know, anything in life, you know, that is so random. And then you say, well, we can't ever have this thing again because this one out of a million times it went wrong. Like, we don't live our lives like that. You know, we have car wrecks sometimes, but we still drive our cars because we know that the overwhelming majority of the time, everything's going to go smoothly. Plus, it's convenient. How else would you get anywhere? So, you know, it'd just be difficult. What are you going to do? Ride horses? What are you going to do? Ride horses? Can't ride horses. It's ridiculous. Who even knows how to get on a horse these days? So my thing was, you don't get rid of handshake lines because of Juwan Howard. If you want to get rid of handshake lines, you do it because you find them unnecessary. You know, in this era of the sport, you do it because the NBA doesn't have them. But to react to Juwan Howard and slice away this entire thing, that made no sense to me.
We can move on, but I just got a note here. Will Brinson, who hosts the Pick Six pod, the world's only, just like we were the first college basketball podcast to go to video, he hosts the world's only daily NFL podcast right here on CBS Sports Network. He has found his way into the chat, and he is referencing, we went out on Friday, and it was a few of us, and he got into, like, what is not as highlighted in the comment there. Will, thank you for watching and promoting the podcast, but I'm not going to get into your Tua, Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson debates, but it was wonderful to see him and our colleague Chip Patterson, host of Cover 3, the best college football podcast out there, also on CBS Sports Podcast. If you are not already subscribed and listening to those gentlemen, please do so as soon as you can.
I hope Will was here when you're...
He was. I don't think he was. Dude, I don't even get how that happened. I have played... That was off our YouTube broadcast. I have played stuff off of YouTube before. You're not messing with me. It was dead silent.
Dude, you saw the comments. Nobody heard that other than you.
Unbelievable.
Dead legs, like, and let's go back to Friday's show. This is what it sounded
it was
like.
Because you were like, dude, how hilarious would it be? The way you set it up and the way I responded to you, it was worth the callback. But now, forget it.
It's a mistake.
Hey, Parrish, I apologize.
It's only a mistake if you don't learn from it. You know, dead leg? Only a mistake if you don't learn from it. Let's move on. So it was a fun weekend in the sport, but as of Sunday afternoon, outside of North Carolina upsetting Duke, it looked like nothing else too crazy was going to happen. And then Nebraska walked into the Kohl Center. We'll get into that next. But first, this better work or I'm going to go crazy. But first, a word from our sponsors. Roll the
There is a divergence in time. Welcome to the road not taken.
Earth, 2024. A single change is vastly more dangerous than you realize. None of our tomorrows are guaranteed.
You must bring us home.
You have one final frontier yet to come.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good job, Nada. That worked perfectly. You should teach Norlander how to do that. So Wisconsin beat Purdue on Tuesday to secure at least a share of the Big Ten title. Now, all the Badgers had to do to get their first outright title since 2015 was beat Nebraska at home on Sunday. And Nebraska's best player, Bryce McGowan's, was out. So this should have been light work. Wisconsin was a 12-point favorite at tip-off. Then Nebraska walked into the Kohl Center. And you know what happened next? Final score, Nebraska 74, Wisconsin 73, which surprisingly gave Illinois an opportunity to win a Big Ten title on Sunday night. They had to beat Iowa at home. That game just wrapped up, if you're watching on YouTube, about 20 minutes ago. Illinois came from behind to beat Iowa. And so because Wisconsin couldn't beat Nebraska today, because Illinois beat Iowa today, we have co-Big Ten champions, Illinois and Wisconsin. And Illinois will actually be the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament. What is Wisconsin doing?
You can't blame Wisconsin for this, man. Again. Trev Alberts, the Nebraska athletic director, in the past 2-3 weeks, went to Fred Hoiberg and said, "We're not going to keep paying you this much money to lose games. You're going to restructure your contract." And since then, Nebraska hasn't lost. Suddenly, Fred Hoiberg has become the national coach of the year and the second coming of Wooden since all this happened. Wisconsin just happened to get in the way here. Nebraska for the auto bid? Are we really going down this road? This team's been at Penn State, at Ohio State, at Wisconsin. Road games, 3 in a row, 3 wins, and completely upsetting the apple cart in the Big Ten in the process there. Credit in all seriousness to the Cornhuskers for getting these wins and finding, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel this season. I mean, you know, this team was just atrocious for most of the season, and now it enters the Big Ten tournament with some real optimism there. Wisconsin slips on the banana peel and will be the 2 seed in the Big Ten, given the Illini, the number 1 seed, and they'll share the regular season championship there. Bucky had its 5-game winning streak snapped. And oh, by the way, obviously a devastating loss for its resume prospects in terms of like hunting for the 2-line now. You know, that losing a game like this, they're going to need to make up for it by winning the Big Ten tournament, which they're capable of doing. Now, I was traveling back and taking care of some stuff when some of this stuff happened. So Johnny Davis got hurt. Do you have the rundown on what actually happened in this and if he's going to be available come Big Ten tournament time?
First, Greg Gard, I believe, told our friend Andy Katz after the game that he's optimistic that Johnny Davis will be available for the Big Ten tournament, but they certainly weren't committed to that at this point. It's called a lower body injury. Kind of weird to see to see exactly what happened. Because, like, if you go read the AP report, it says Johnny Davis left game with a lower body injury after being hit in the head by Trey McGowan's. And so the implication, if you're just reading and you didn't see it, is that Trey McGowan's hit this dude in the head and somehow he got a lower body injury. Well, Trey McGowan's did hit him in the head and got a flagrant two, I believe. But the injury seemed to happen before that. Johnny Davis is out in transition, and it looked like when he kicked his, you know, when you're running, your legs, you know what it looks like when people are running. You've been running your whole life. It looked like his leg went back. Tell me if this is what you saw, because I sent you a clip of it. It looked like his leg went back and hit a Nebraska player's leg, and that created a situation where he then took an awkward step, and he seemed to have – that's where it appeared the lower body injury happened. And then he sort of, you know, kept going towards the goal, and that's when McGowan's hit him in the head. But I believe that whatever this injury is happened around midcourt, not at the rim.
Yeah, it's a weird-looking play, because he gets tripped up and then the foul happens pretty hard there and he gets hit in the face. But yes, it apparent so if he's going to be available, that's going to be massive. Wisconsin, I believe, was down when that happened, so it's not like they were cruising. Davis gets out of the game and then Wisconsin falls. Nebraska had actually been playing well to that point overall. Wisconsin was also a big favorite to win this game. Quite clearly didn't do that. And so its metrics are going to plummet. They're down to 30. It's not plummet, but they were like 24, 25 going into this at KenPom there. So
Nebraska, on the other side of the spectrum, Nebraska, 3-game winning streak. They went from 181 to 142 at KenPom. 39 spot jumps. Fred Hoiberg is coaching the top 150 team right now.
Wisconsin losing that game, man. I don't know what the percentage was, but heading into the day, was it 85% it was going to be the one seed? Was it 90? How likely was it that, like, because Wisconsin had to lose and Illinois had to win, and Illinois was playing the better team?
Wisconsin was a 12-point favorite. That alone is outrageous odds.
A 12-point favorite situation. I think Duke's game got to 11.5. More surprising, Carolina doing it at Duke or Nebraska doing it at Wisconsin? What's more surprising?
According to the point spread, it's Nebraska beating Wisconsin, but like the same North Carolina team that's been walloped 5 times this season going into Cameron Indoor and winning by double digits. That to me is more surprising.
I'm with you, man. I would play the sound if I could, but apparently
try it one more time.
I can't. It's vexing me. I can't.
It didn't vex you more than it vexed me.
And by the way, I was watching the video of it play, so I would know when to stop it. So I didn't even see what your face looked like.
I'm sitting here like this, like a statue, because sometimes when we're doing like CBS Sports HQ, like this happened to me today, for whatever reason, you can't hear the other guest. And so today, I was on with Jerry Palm, and you know how it is. Sometimes a producer will be in your ear and they'll be like, "Hey, we're going to retee you. That means the host is going to ask you another question. So don't just jump in when Jerry Palm's done talking." Or they'll say, "You're just going to follow Jerry." And that means whenever Jerry's done talking, you start talking. And so Jerry starts talking. I can't hear a word he's saying. And I'm scared they're going to tell me, "You just follow Jerry," because I don't know when that is. So I'm texting a producer like, "You got to retee me. I can't hear a word that Jerry's saying." But I'm sitting there like this, like nodding along, like I'm agreeing with what Jerry's saying. I have no idea what he's saying. I'm just sitting there nodding. And that's kind of what I was doing with you. I was like, I can't hear this, but maybe I don't need to hear it. Maybe it's just playing and then Norlanda will react to it. And then I'll go, "Ah, ha, ha, that was funny." But I couldn't hear a thing. And turns out nobody could hear a thing.
I wanted you to hear it too. But so it goes. We've had some, the past two shows, this is March. That's all I got on Wisconsin, buddy. You got anything else before we get to the rest of the weekend?
Nah, that's it. That's enough. Okay. You lose to Nebraska at home and blow an outright Big Ten title, you get 5 minutes. And then
what else
on.
We get?
So before we get to some other notable results for the weekend, let me tell you about our Ion College Basketball Bracket Challenge. It's for you guys, listeners of the Ion College Basketball Podcast. We want you to compete with us in a bracket challenge game. I'm going to be in there. Norlander will be in there. David Cobb, Kyle Boone, and we want you in there as well. So here's what you got to do. Join at cbssports.com/ionbrackets. That's EYEONBRACKETS. The winner gets bragging rights, a shout out on the pod next to Larnell, and a $100 gift card to Paramount Plus. So when the bracket is set, go enter. And when you're done entering our bracket challenge, enter some more. You can even create your own, compete against friends, have a chance to win a trip to the 2023 Final Four. Again, the way to get involved, you can do it on the CBS Sports app or at cbssports.com/ionbrackets. That's cbssports.com/ionbrackets. All right, Norlander, I think you could argue that after UNC's win this weekend, the two most meaningful wins for bubble teams that also doubled as upsets belong to schools coached by famous alums. Juwan Howard's Michigan Wolverines as 5.5-point underdogs, very much on the bubble, upset Ohio State 75-69. Penny Hardaway's Memphis Tigers, very much on the bubble, as 2.5-point underdogs, beat Houston 75-61. Jerry Palm had Memphis in the first four on Sunday morning and Michigan as the first team out of his bracket. Both added quadrant one wins on Sunday afternoon. So I don't want to speak for Jerry, but I would imagine Memphis will probably now move into the main bracket and Michigan into the first four. Deadleg, I want you to talk to Memphis and Michigan fans. Are the Tigers and Wolverines definitely in the NCAA tournament now, or do they still got work to do?
Lock them up.
Lock them both up.
Lock them up. Lock them up. We'll get to this when we tour the weekend, but there were a lot of results that benefited teams that like needed to get a win and teams that were near the cut line lost. Lock them up. They're in. How about Memphis? I'm going to apologize to Memphis right now. Because it was a 9-8 team on January 20th. And I said, we're done. We're done with this team on this podcast. And we're not done. They've lost once since then at SMU. Only once. SMU, by the way, bubble team supreme at the moment. But yeah, 19-9 here. Here's now, we don't have the updated because the net will update on Monday. It really would be nice if the net could go the way of KenPom here and refresh basically within 10 minutes of a game finishing, but that's not where we're at.
I'll tell you what it would really be helpful for, the top 25 and one, because I write these things at night typically, and then I have to wake up in the morning and double check them. I have to go back through 26, you know, quad one this, quad two that, to make sure stuff didn't shift overnight, and every night something shifts overnight.
I hear you. So Memphis was 41 in the net entering the day. It's clearly going to jump here. It's got a sweep of Houston. You know, I think it's going to be enough. 19-9, 4-3 quad one, 3-4 quad two, two quad three losses. I really think they're a lock. I know it sounds kind of wild, but if you start, the Bama win's probably going to get them in. Bama win's good. Virginia Tech on a neutral. They're on the wrong side of the bubble at the moment, but it's that win's actually improved since then. The Wichita State win on the road has value. I think Memphis is in. Michigan's even better. Agree? Michigan's in a better spot than Memphis. Although, did you say that was reversed? Did you say Memphis was?
Yeah. Like I'll run you through it real quick. I got both the breakdowns. Memphis, by the way, 10-1 in the last 11 games. They're 3-0 against ranked teams. 15-5 with DeAndre Williams in the lineup. Just 3-4 without him. 8-1. Since Amani Bates stopped playing, they're up to 28th at KenPom. And as for the quadrant stuff, 4-3 in quadrant one, 3-4 in quadrant two. So 7-7 first two quadrants with two quadrant three losses. Michigan 5-9 in quadrant one, 3-3 in quadrant two. So 8-12 in the first two quadrants with one quadrant three loss to Minnesota. So Michigan 4 games under 500 in the first two quadrants, but only one quadrant three loss. Memphis 500 in the first two quadrants, but two quadrant three losses. I do think it's close, but I'll trust Jerry on this. He thinks Memphis is ahead of Michigan right now. I think if Memphis were to take a horrific loss in its first AAC tournament game, like let's say USF. I want to say they play the winner of maybe USF and UCF, something like that. Mm-hmm. If USF were to win and then they play USF and then they lose to USF and take that horrific loss, then I think they got to sweat it out. Like, they'll be nervous, but still probably in the first four, probably get in. Because the thing you got to remember about bubble teams, we're like, you know, they don't need to lose. They're all going to lose. All these bubble teams are going to lose again, right?
You said this on Friday's show. I'd play it back, but I got no confidence in
that. Yeah, good luck. I dare you to try it. I dare you. So they're all going to lose. I think Memphis is probably in no matter what, but if they take a horrific loss in their first AAC tournament game, they'll probably have to sweat it out. Michigan probably just has to avoid a horrific loss. A horrific loss might push Michigan back to the wrong side, more so than Memphis. But I think as long as these two teams do not take terrible losses, they're going to be fine. And by the way, Michigan won Sunday without Hunter Dickinson. He didn't play, had a stomach ailment of some sort. So that was a big win because, you know, even with Hunter Dickinson, you're an underdog. Then you find out just before tip he's not playing and you still go win the game. That's impressive stuff.
We will have a little heads up here. Starting tomorrow, you will get some conference tournament preview pods, appetizer sized, if you will. Big Ten will not be one of the first two of those, so I'll mention this now. But the bracket's out. So Illinois the 1, Bucky 2, Purdue 3, Rutgers is the 4 seed. Hey, I'm at Rutgers is the 4 seed. Indiana plays Michigan in the 8-9. And that's, I don't think that's an elimination game. I think Michigan's in, because when Howard got the suspension, I said Martelli's got to get that team to 3 wins, and I don't think he's going to do it. I thought they'd go 2-3. He got him to 3. Sticking with it. I still think they're good. But Indiana, Michigan, 8-9, second round matchup. That'll be Friday. That's got some serious intrigue to it. So I was actually curious where Michigan landed in the tournament because of this result, and there it is. Hoosiers, we'll get to them in just a second. They'll play against Michigan in the 8-9 there. I think Michigan's good. I think they should be in. No Dickinson as well. That was a really, really big win on the road at your rival, beating Ohio State. And the pattern continues, by the way. Since February 10th, this is Michigan. Win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. The pattern holds. Indiana will continue to save its season and beat Michigan when the Big Ten tournament starts later this week. But we'll have to wait and see.
Got internet problems still in Indiana. This time, Jaden Ivey caused him.
Caused him. I know. You want to swerve right into that? Because what the hell?
No. They just got internet problems. They're not even watching this. They can't watch it.
Okay. What was that last play of that game? I don't know. And Purdue kept it closer than they needed to. So, yeah, whatever.
Like, this is not good for us. Indiana is a basketball-crazed state. I mean, we've taken one of the most basketball-crazed states, and they can't watch the Island College Basketball Podcast because the internet's out.
We're talking Purdue fans too, right? They're just getting caught up in this. They don't, you know.
I think the way it works, and I'll have to read more about it.
All right,
but it is, if you are registered as a Purdue fan, it's a little bit like Elon Musk is doing in Ukraine. Like, okay, they'll bring in special equipment, and they'll get your Wi-Fi working.
Okay,
but
so they got to hit up Elon Musk, basically.
Yes. Purdue fans, I think, have a direct relationship with Elon Musk. And so they're able to get internet in. But Hoosier fans, it's a bad situation.
Mark Cuban isn't helping them out. IU.
It doesn't appear
famous
so.
IU alum Mark Cuban. He can't step in and do anything for them right now.
I haven't heard from an Indiana fan in weeks.
Okay.
Internet.
You must be right.
Internet down. It's terrible. Let me ask you this. Is Houston a computer tricker? Is Houston a computer tricker?
Lay out the case. What do you mean? Go ahead.
Well, Houston, first off, you're outright AAC champion. Not trying to discount that. Kelvin Sampson, I think I could make a Hall of Fame case for him. Tremendous coach. I think Houston might be computer trickers. They woke up on Sunday morning. They're third in the net. Third in the net. They're fifth at KenPom, second in BPI, fourth in Seguin, 12th in KPI, second at Torvik.
Second at Torvik in BPI? That's going to change. That's got to change after like Sunday. There's no way this team is still second in those metrics.
Could Torvik, be a computer.
Could be a computer tricker. We can't have this.
Computer tricker. Now let me give you the resume. They're 1-4 in quadrant one, 7-1 in quadrant two. So 8-5 in the first two quadrants, but they only have one quadrant one win. They have zero wins over teams currently projected to make the NCAA tournament. Their best win is over Oklahoma State. On the season, Houston is 0-4 against top 30 KenPom teams. And since losing both Marcus Sasser and Tremont Mark, they're 1-3 against top 60 KenPom teams. They've beaten nobody all season long. Might be computer trickers.
I don't know if they'll fall far enough. They will be an interesting test case here with where they get seated, because what you are suggesting here is like 7 seed at best material. And the idea that Houston would either be a 7 or in the 8-9 game is an outright nightmare for a 1 or 2 seed if it drew them in the second round.
Is it though? I just told you they beat no good teams all year.
I know.
Is it really? You're worried about a team that's never been
made
good
the final.
Team?
Made the Final Four a year ago and brought back plenty from that. No coach, lost two of the top four. No coach wants to play Kelvin Sampson on a 2-day turnaround. I know what you're saying. That is like, you got to be bleeping kidding me kind of situation. No coach wants Kelvin on a 2-day turnaround. None.
I bet Memphis be ready to play him again.
2-day turnaround though. Tuesday, get it going.
Memphis beats them by double digits every time they play now.
And that's factual. That did happen there. And that's what's going to get Memphis into the tournament. Penny. Get it done there. That's a lot of tricking of a lot of computers. That's all I'm saying. That's a lot.
It's a lot of computer tricking going on. They've tricked all the computers. Normally, you can trick a computer. You can't trick all the computers. They've tricked every computer. And, like, I cannot stress this enough. They lost two of their top four players before Christmas in December. Christmas is in December. What team would still be great after losing two of its top four? Take two of the top four off Duke. Are they still great? Take two of the top four off of Kentucky. Are they still great? Like, take the best player and another top four. Take Oscar Tshiebwe and Xavier Wheeler away. What is Kentucky? They're not good. Good job, Norlander. At Duke, take Paolo Banchero and Trevor Kills away. What are we looking at there? They're not good. Okay, those are the only teams I know.
All right, fair enough.
But you get the point.
Yes.
So, like, if Houston isn't great, they shouldn't be. They lost two of their top four players before Christmas. But although the computers still say they're great, there's nothing in the resume, though, that says they're great. Absolutely nothing in the resume.
Sunday, March 6th. Is Houston in the Sweet 16, yes or no?
No.
Okay. I'm going to begrudgingly say no, but I
don't want to say no. I love Houston.
I'll say no, but I'm not happy with that. With my no,
like what Kelvin has done with that program is incredible.
So you got him out of the top 25-1.
Okay, picture this: it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I haven't updated it yet. I was on CBS Sports HQ today for 50 hours. So I haven't updated it yet. But I seriously, here's the thing. The 8-5 in the first two quadrants with zero additional losses is like better than, you know, some school others. Like there are schools at the bottom of the top 25-1 that are like 500 in the first two quadrants. Like Seton Hall is like right around 500 in the first two quadrants. So if you're not caught up on everything I've said about they haven't really beaten anybody, they still got a, there's still three games above 500 in the first two quadrants. So you can keep them ranked on that combined with the strength of the computer numbers. But here's the thing. I think I got them 16th right now on as of Sunday morning. I wondered, like, should I just drop them all the way out? I don't think I will because, again, three games above 500 first two quadrants is good relative to the bottom of the top 25-1. But they're going to be in the bottom of the top 25-1 at best, you know, for all of the reasons we've already stated.
What else we got from the weekend?
Well, before we get out of here, let's just run through some other notable results from the weekend that we haven't already touched on. Arizona beat Cal. Nothing surprising about that. But they end up winning the Pac-12 by three games. So that was a dominant outright conference championship for Tommy Lloyd in his first season with Arizona. Auburn beat South Carolina to secure the outright SEC title. Baylor and Kansas both won. So they're now co-Big 12 champions. Scott Drew, respect to the Drew family, named Big 12 Coach of the Year earlier on Sunday. Kentucky went to the Old Dome, beat Florida to keep the Gators on the wrong side of the bubble. Purdue beat Indiana, keep the Hoosiers on the wrong side of the bubble. UCLA's Mick Cronin got his first ever win over USC's Andy Enfield. Hashtag nail can stay. Michigan State beat Maryland to make Tom Izzo the winningest coach in Big Ten history. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to him. The Murray State Racers won the OVC tournament. The Loyola Chicago Ramblers won the MVC tournament. The Longwood Longwoods won the Big South tournament. Dead leg, take it. Wherever you want to take it. The Longwood Longwoods, the mascot is a penis. Got to make that happen.
first tournament appearance ever. Longwood out of the Big South. First auto bid. Griff Aldridge gets it done. A hot mid major. One loss since December 22nd. Keep an eye out.
Longwood in there the Big go. South.
We got okay.
Longwood in the Big South, if you know what I mean.
Murray State is 30-2. It has more wins and fewer losses than any team in the country. There's no excuse not to hire Matt McMahon to a bigger job if you're an AD in a power conference right now. By the way, 18th time Murray State's made the NCAA tournament. It will strut into the big dance with the longest win streak in the country at 20 in a row. And with Murray and Belmont off to the Valley, that OVC title game, which is always great, and I, of course, wasn't able to watch it because of what I was doing down in Durham, but I did catch the highlights, and I did, you know, receive a few texts here and there on it, and then I saw social media kind of popping with it. That OVC title game delivers almost every single year, and I'm talking like the past 15 years. There have been great game after great game, and now that conference, unfortunately, seems destined to be, you know, bottom four in the country indefinitely because, you know, the best teams in basketball and then on the football side have left. And so I just wanted to at least note that, you know, at least Murray State and Morehead State, which came really close. And I was told that Johnny Broom had just an absolutely stellar game. He is a stud. And I actually had someone tell me the preseason, and then I had a different person tell me on Saturday that he could be earning an NBA paycheck one day. He's that good. It would have been great to see Morehead State maybe steal a bid because Murray was in no matter what. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. I wanted to mention at least the Ohio Valley going out with a bang, as we know that league to be. So good on them. And then, yeah, Loyola's back in. Top 25 KenPom team. I don't know where. I don't know if Loyola can jump to the 12 line or not. It wouldn't surprise me if it did. They would have been a debatable bubble team. I don't think Loyola is getting in if it doesn't win over Drake in the Valley Championship game on Sunday on CBS, but it did. It's like, in.
And by the way, they were down double digits early.
Yeah.
And then went on a 19-0 run, and Drake was never able to catch him after that. Remember, like, Loyola Chicago was projected, if you had them in the bracket, as first four. But now they're an automatic bid. They can't go to the first four.
Yes.
So they're going to be seated outside of Dayton somewhere.
Well, you go to the first four, but only if you're a 16, and obviously Loyola is not a 16.
Right. Yeah. That's, the 16s will be there, but
yeah.
Loyola is going to be, they're going to be an 11 or a 12, right? That's what they'll be.
I think they'll, if they're 11, it wouldn't stun me. I'm going to say 12 as of right now. We'll see what happens. By the way, the bubble did kind of splinter my opinion. Bubble teams that got their wins and are like, I think they're in. Carolina, Memphis, San Francisco, which I think was in no matter what, but like it's not even a question. Notre Dame, Rutgers, Miami held on against Syracuse. I heard that game was an absolute disaster down the stretch. Apparently Buddy Boeheim had like 30 and didn't get a shot off in the final 90 seconds. Don't know how it happens. And then Loyola Chicago. Xavier also won. I think Xavier should be safe, but a teaser. We're going to talk about the Musketeers on the Big East Conference Tournament Preview Pod. It's about 25 minutes. It'll pop into your feed on Monday. David Cobb and I will talk about, is Xavier safe? Should it be safe? It got the win, avoided losing to Georgetown. I think you can make a case one way or the other. Those teams got the wins. The bubble teams that got the losses, you mentioned Indiana, Florida, way off. VCU, North Texas. I'd argue they should probably be in, but they did lose. Finally, that win streak came to an end. BYU is probably out of there. Oh, by the way, SMU also got a win as a bubble team. And then Virginia Tech probably needed another win to really keep its bubble viability out there. It lost. I feel
what did
like
Virginia Tech do? Did they go lose at Clemson?
I think that's what it was. I'll bring it up real quick here. Yeah, but they needed, if they would have won, I think their case gets a lot stronger. But yes, it was a 63-59 loss at Clemson.
Yeah.
So, and they still got a shot here, but it does feel like this weekend really did parse out some of these at-large situations. Yes, there's still probably two or three spots that can go either way, but we're not heading. From my vantage point, Parrish, it doesn't feel like we're heading into conference tournament season with, we definitely are heading into conference tournament season with like six bids up for grabs at-large. That's not the case. If you want to maybe make the case for like four at most, I'm willing to hear it, but I'm thinking it's two, maybe three at this point. And so, will there be bid thieves and to shrink that number? If SMU were to make the American Championship game, would SMU then be able to vault into the picture, and would it leapfrog anybody? You know, if Xavier were to lose to Butler, would it be out of the picture? There's some interesting things to keep an eye on with all of that. One more conference tournament note. Bellarmine knocked off Liberty. Bellarmine's not eligible to go to the tournament because it hasn't served its 5 years as a D1 member. It's a stupid rule. I don't know why I know why they have it, but it's just, it's dumb. And so because of that, you're going to have in the A-Sun, you'll have a non one seed because Jacksonville State lost to Jacksonville. Jacksonville was the one. You're going to have a lower seeded team get the auto bid because Bellarmine could win the A-Sun bracket and then not get the auto bid. They do it because they basically want to discourage teams from going Division One. So they put in like these financial barriers, and then they say, oh, by the way, if you're going to do this, you have to prove that you can be viable without receiving postseason funds. So when you go D1, you can't play in the tournament for 5 years. And so that's part of the deal. But I hate it. Like, Bellarmine's a legitimately good team and should be able to play in the tournament this year. But that's the rule. I at least wanted to note that because there's a little bit of wonkiness going on in the ASUN. Otherwise, GP, with what you mentioned, you know, we just set up with conference tournaments. Regular season's done. I don't know. To me, the Big 12 is going to be a fantastic conference tournament. The SEC is going to be a fantastic conference tournament. Big East will be as well. I'm really looking forward to this, but it's not quite as chaotic and shifty on the sea lines near the top with some room to move, and then near the bubble, as I thought it would have been a month ago for sure. That just doesn't seem like the case.
And then looking ahead to the next couple of nights, we've got West Coast Conference semis on Monday night, and then a possible Gonzaga-St. Mary's rematch on Tuesday night. We got the Summit League semis coming up on Monday. Everybody knows Murray State went undefeated in the league. You know who else went undefeated in the league?
Show them. If you're watching on YouTube, show them.
My Jackrabbits. Look, I'm rocking Jackrabbits.
There we go.
Shouts to South Dakota State. They heard us talking about them last Sunday on the Island College Basketball Podcast. I mentioned they had Ukraine colors. So if we were going to nickname Ukraine in this war, they could be the Ukraine Jackrabbits. Got home from New York. Had a package from South Dakota State. Told him I'd rock South Dakota State gear on the podcast. So here I am. Go Jackrabbits. I've been to Brookings, by the way.
I have not been to Brookings. And
dude, I landed in that airport in Sioux Falls. I was the only person traveling without a gun.
Okay, I didn't know where that was.
The whole plane was filled with hunters. It was me and a bunch of hunters. I like had to go to Minneapolis maybe or something like that. My whole I was the only person on the plane who wasn't going there to kill something.
You're going there to kill a story is what you were going to do. And you did. Mike Dom. We know what happened. That's what
I told you. I told you Mike Dom. I wrote a Mike Dom story.
That's right. Mike Dom.
And then he became one of the greatest players in the history of college basketball.
Let's be real on something here, though. I don't have a Jackrabbit shirt. I don't need one. I'm not peddling for gear or anything like that. But I was the first national writer to get in on the Jackrabbit train when I told you Nate Walters was an NBA pick. You mocked me for it. He became an NBA pick. Nate Walters predates Mike Dom. Where's my bunny gear? Not cool. Not cool. I don't need it, though.
Everybody at the airport was grabbing a rifle out of baggage claim. I was just getting like a suitcase, like a shaving bag. Everybody else had a gun. It was wild. Apparently, there's a lot of hunting going on up there.
That's the rumor. Yeah.
Woo! We done here?
I think we're done.
Got to go watch that new Lakers show on HBO.
Get it done.
Jeff Perlman wrote the book.
Indeed. Very good writer.
Terrific.
Terrific.
He's a legend.
He's a legend. At reminder, check that podcast feed early and often this week. We will have bonus episodes for you. And we're getting you geared up. We're getting you geared up. And, ooh, hold on. Real time booking right now. You don't fly tomorrow. Parrish's schedule gets altered this week because it's conference tournaments. Are we podcasting live Wednesday at 10 a.m.?
Yes. Are you going to? Yes. Okay. But we have to have a hard out.
If you say so. It's quite literally your decision.
Well, I think my flight leaves at 11:25 a.m. Central, 12:25 Eastern. So we can start at 10 a.m. Eastern, but we got to get out of this. Probably got to be out of the house by 11 a.m. Eastern.
Do you want to start at 9:30 a.m.?
No. Okay. No.
9:45.
You and these early.
9:45.
I'm always so tired. Even on CBS Sports HQ, I can go back and watch my hits, and the ones from like 9 in the morning, they just look so different than the ones at 4 in the afternoon. At 9 in the morning, I'm like this.
Is that what's going on? All right, so you want to start at 10, just be out, hard out. Yeah, we can get out in 60 minutes, although this episode we didn't, but yes.
Well, I think some of it was because we were silent for about 4 minutes.
That was part of it. My internet went out. What do you want?
What a disaster that was.
You know what, though?
We recovered okay, but it felt like a disaster in real time.
Felt a lot like of people didn't. We will get out of here. I've got bathroom door doubters all up in my mentions, though. A lot of people didn't believe it.
Update. Yeah. I found my AirPods. I found them.
And then what happened?
I still have them. They're sitting on my desk right now.
You
said wearing them all weekend. It's like I thought they were gone for sure. Turns out I walked in the front door, set them on a little table we have near the front door. And then like when the kids got up to go to school the next morning, One of them like bumped it because they're probably throwing their backpacks and stuff. And it fell behind the table. But I could do the Find My AirPods on my phone, and it showed up. They were in my house. By the way, I sent you guys a picture. There's like three sets of AirPods in my house.
I didn't know what I was looking at. I was like, what's he trying to say right now? There's like nine AirPods in the screenshot right now.
My Find My Phone iPhone thing is hilarious because it just shows there are AirPods like Easter eggs all over my house. So I went in search of my newest pair. Wife found them on Saturday morning, and I had multiple listeners send me links to like things to help me with this. I ordered a thing that will now click to my backpack that I travel with, that I walk to the studio with. And then so it's clipped on my backpack, and then you it holds your AirPods. And so now when I'm on a plane or in an Uber, I'll take my AirPods out. If I take them out, I will put them in something that is connected to the bag that I have never forgotten. I've never forgotten my whole bag. I've forgotten AirPods and iPhones and iPads, but I've never forgotten my entire bag. So as long as I don't forget my entire bag, I should be go to go. This is good to go. I think this is life changing stuff.
I'm proud of you, man. I am. That's maybe this month is turning for the better for you.
We'll see.
One last thing as we get out of here, though, because got plenty of feedback on my hotel bathroom situation. And then we had Nada. I'm going to text you this tweet right now. See if you can drop this in, because this bathroom situation, we had a listener find us and say, you want unacceptable? And he sent us a photo of a hotel room he stayed in Los Angeles, apparently. And it's the bed, and then it's a glass shower next to the bed. It was unbelievable. And I guess the only blockage from the shower to the toilet was if you closed the shower curtain. I don't know if not.
Unless you're staying in that hotel room with an Instagram model, that is awful. An awful situation.
How is that even possible? Here, he's bringing it up on the live stream. Look at this atrocity. Look at this. How does that happen? This is unbelievable. I had door skeptics on my bathroom situation. I don't know what to tell you.
You can acknowledge, because everybody agreed with me, not having a door. The toilet should always be separated from the hotel room, period.
Yeah, and it was. I want to be clear. It was not what you're watching on YouTube right now. There was a wall, and then it was an enclave situation.
I know, but you could, if you were rooming with Adam Zagoria.
I don't know why it's got to be Zagoria, but sure.
If you were rooming with Adam Zagoria.
Why can't we be roomies?
I would never stay with you.
Okay, I'm clean.
I like to be alone.
All right. So I'm the one who's got to have the roommate in this situation. Under no circumstances, any hypotheticals, are you sharing a room with someone that's not in your direct family hotel?
I have done it before, but I've also told people just no. Like, I've had people ask me, hey, like, you know, you're at, you know, some grassroots event or the Final Four. It's like, hey, my room fell apart or whatever. You know, I thought I had a room, don't have a room. You know, okay, can you mind if I crash with you? Do you have two beds? Do you mind if I crash with you? And I'm like, listen, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but like, no, I just want to be alone. I don't want that. I don't want to wake up and have to say what's up to somebody else. I just want to be alone. I like being alone. I don't like being lonely, but I like being alone.
I hate to break it to you. If you win the bracket challenge this year, one of the prizes is that they get to go on a trip with you and stay with you in the same hotel room.
No.
So we got to talk.
So like you're let's say you're in a hotel with Adam Zagoria. And
again, why is it gotta be sex?
I just think it's funnier if it's sex.
All right.
And he's got to do a number two. Is there any way for you to be like, yo, hey man, shut the door?
No,
that's outrageous. That's outrageous.
I don't know what to tell you.
It's outrageous.
There was clearly like, what would be the word for it? There was clearly like a guider where a door should be.
Yeah.
There was no door though. Like there screwed to the floor. For all I know, like there was a door and it like someone got drunk and broke it and they never fixed it. I don't know. There was no door.
That's outrageous. Like think about you're just forget. Like let's just say you're in your hotel with your wife And like she just
and
goes
you just I mean you I, you probably like you asked to change rooms or whatever. I don't know.
Like you just and you just know. You're not even like you're just walking to the bathroom because you don't know anybody's in the bathroom and then you walk in and your wife's just taking a dump. Like you,
what
you
are
had no
we
way.
Even doing here? You had what no are way. We doing?
You had no way to know that your wife was.
Gosh, you're
the
conjuring all these images of people. Urinating, defecating, you're a sick man. You are sick. This has happened on back-to-back shows.
I want everybody right now to close their eyes and imagine Norlander's wife taking a dump. I'm just saying, like, normally, like you walk into the bathroom and, like, the door to the toilet is closed. So, you know, so you go, okay, somebody's in there. But what if there is no door and you just walk in and there's somebody just sitting there? What? This is unacceptable. It's unacceptable room design.
I got it.
I think it's fine when you're by yourself, but under any circumstances where you're with another human, there has got to be a door to close the toilet off from the room. That's outrageous.
All right, let's get out of here.
We should have gone already. We should have gone 10 minutes ago. It's a mistake. Chop this part off, Nada, and the part with the harp at the beginning. Get rid of that. We'll be good to go. We'll be good to go. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Jeff Perlman. Shouts to Kevin Henry. 6'2 legend. Average 8 points, 1.5 rebounds for Baylor. 2001-2002 season after transferring from New Mexico. That's my new thing. I'm going to give you stats on every legend from Baylor. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys for listening once again to the Allen College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. I've been watching the number of people in here. Shocking that we didn't lose people over the past 10 minutes.
They love it. These are the real ones.
I would have left if I were you guys. I wanted to leave, but that is my job. It's literally my job. I got to be here till the end. If you haven't subscribed yet to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, please go do it. Apple, Spotify. Leave a nice review. 5 stars. Write some kind words. There's more of us than there are of them. Don't let them trick you. Don't let the misinformation trick you. There's more of us than there are of them. Smash the like button before you get out of here. Please. If you're watching on YouTube. And if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, it would really do us a big help. Big favor if you'd knock that out as well. Like Deadleg told you, we are doing previews of the top 6 conference tournaments. That's the Power 5 leagues plus the Big East. They will all be recorded on Monday and Tuesday and be dropping into the feed periodically. Me and Norlander will do some together. Deadleg will do some with Kyle Boone, with David Cobb. I'll do the same thing. So we'll have previews of the top 6 conference tournaments. They're going to be short episodes, between 20 and 25 minutes. Unless, of course, we start talking about bathrooms at the end. Then they could go to 30 to 35 minutes. You never know with us. But be on the lookout for those. And then we'll have another normal episode starting here on YouTube at 10 a.m. Eastern, sharp, on Wednesday. Till then, take care.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He's suffocating people with pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable. They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.